one of you smart guys that graduates and comes back and says, okay, we are ready for reflex mechanisms. I am Patty McGlinchey. I am here to teach you about reflexes. That's the idea of this class. We're going to go through the nervous system and see how the nervous system organizes for a reflex. This class has a clinical aspect to it, so you will be able to utilize what I'm teaching you in the clinic. In fact, you'll be able to have fun this weekend provoking reflexes of each other. So it's a great class. There are learning objectives, and the class follows that structure. So you can read them through as we approach them. The first thing we're going to do is define reflex. Actually, the first thing we're going to do is look at a silly cartoon. This one doesn't make me laugh as much as that last one we had with the stick figure guy. It says, whoa, what a good one. Try it, Hobbs. Just poke his brain right where my finger is. Sick neurosurgical jokes. I'm reading a book right now. It's called When the Air Hits the Brain. And it's about a neurosurgeon and his progression from medical school into the neurosurgery. And it is funny. I'm putting it on the Summer Nora reading list. It's actually on the Summer Nora reading list. I just haven't given it to you. I gave it to the senior class. You guys will get it very soon. Okay, so now to the definition of a reflex. What is a reflex? How many of you get these definitions? You're like, yeah, whatever, definition, move on. No, we're not going to do that with this definition. This definition says so much. We're going to take our time and dissect it and figure out what a reflex is. First of all, the first thing says a fast. Reflexes are not slow. They happen very, very, very quickly. In fact, so quickly that your higher levels of your brain may be informed that they're happening, but they have no control. Okay? It's a fast, fast neurological process here. The second thing is predictable. You can't predict a reflex is going to so much happen as you can predict the response of a reflex. You provoke it, the response happens. It happens the same way. It might be more extreme or less extreme, but the same response is going to happen. Okay? Predictable. A fast, predictable, anatomic response. This thing is wired into you. It is in your anatomy. You all have reflexes wired there. Your patients are going to have the same exact reflexes wired into them. And it responds to changes in the environment. We're talking internal environment as well as external environment. So something provokes it. Some change in the environment will provoke a response. And the result is it maintains homeostasis. Now, if that's not an OT word, I don't know what is. Homeostasis, it's like balance of life. That's what we're looking for, right? We want our life to be balanced, not just our lives, but our internal. And I only pick on OT about that because you have a lot in your profession that we don't about psych and mental health, getting that balance. In physical therapy, we're more looking for a physical balance. But reflexes, their job is to maintain homeostasis, the internal balance and external. Now, having said that, we're going to learn some reflexes that you're going to go, homeostasis? I don't think so. But yes, maybe evolutionarily they provoked or brought about homeostasis, and now to us they are meaningless. But they did do homeostasis at some point. Alrighty, so we did take a long time doing that definition. I do expect you to know it. The reflex is composed of five different components. The first component is the receptor, the sensory receptor. Something's got to set this thing off. Alright, my favorite reflex to provoke is... No, I say this laughingly. I don't do this on purpose. It's the pain reflex. It's called the flexor withdrawal. What's the stimulus? Pain. I don't like to provoke this on people, okay? But it's just a fun reflex to teach, okay? Favorite teaching. So the stimulus affects the receptor. If it's pain that's the stimulus, what's the receptor going to be? Free nerve ending. That's the sensory receptor. OT, don't worry about that. sensory receptor picking it up. Actually, do worry about it. It's later in the class. We're going to have to learn and be responsible for it. Free nerve endings are the sensory receptor picking up that stimulus. So that's component number one. You need a sensory receptor. That receptor needs to be attached onto an afferent neuron because you need something to communicate that response into the spinal cord. So that's component number two, an afferent neuron. Now let me move my slides on a little bit more because I have, oh no, I don't. I took it out. I'm going back. Okay. The third component is you need a way to process this. So somewhere there has to be a synapse, a neuron meeting a neuron, where a processing occurs, that integration component of the nervous system, processing occurring, and that occurs at a synapse, or maybe two synapses, or three. Every reflex has its own anatomy. The fourth component is an efferent neuron. There has to be a neuron to take the message back to do the response. Efferent, your motor neuron. And then the last component is the effector itself, the muscle that contracts or the gland that contracts. Something's got to have the effect. That's your effector. So put those five things together and you have a reflex arc. Stimulus gets, the message gets sent in, processed, sent out, something happens. Reflex. Some are very simple and some are more complicated. All right, now simple, what I'm talking about is the neuroanatomy involved. Some of them only take one synapse. Here's an example of it. And my pictures aren't the greatest because they're black and white, but hopefully as I color on them, you'll be able to see everything going on. All right, so follow me through here. Here we have component number one of the reflex arc. It's the muscle spindle. Oh, I just crossed it out. The muscle spindle. This is a receptor in your muscles that senses muscle stretch. Muscle spindle. So we got the receptor. I made it all blotchy there. The afferent neuron takes that message in. It's pre-wired in you, so what's really going in is the impulse. And it synapses. Oh, I forgot to draw the cell body. Gotta draw the cell body. Okay, it synapses onto the motor neuron. I'm going to draw this one blue. So there's the cell body of the motor neuron lying where it should in the ventral horn of the spinal cord. They just had their tests on this. I got to throw it back out at them. And that efferent neuron, the axon comes out and goes to the muscle, and it stimulates that muscle to contract. So we have all the components. We got receptor, afferent neuron, processing center, efferent neuron, and muscle. But the processing center only consisted of one synapse. Very simple reflex, cut and dry, simple, simple, simple. This one would be termed a monosynaptic reflex. So you're going to see this throughout the handout. When we actually get into talking about different reflexes, they're going to be called monosynaptic or polysynaptic. So look at this one using the same color codes. We got the free nerve ending out here. Afferent neuron with cell body coming in. We have synapse number one. I'm going to use red again. On to an interneuron. Interneurons only lie in the central nervous system and they are used to bridge reflexes. Here's one right there. That interneuron is going to synapse onto the efferent neuron, which takes the message out to the muscle, causing the muscle to contract. So we have all five components again. Receptor, afferent, processing center, efferent neuron, and effector. Okay? They all work together to make the reflex arc. But in this case, the processing center consisted of two synapses and an interneuron. Do you think we could have three synapses involved? Oh, yeah. Four? Yeah, should I keep going? It can be polysynaptic, which means there can be more than one. And it can go up and up and up. There are some very complicated reflexes that have many synapses involved in that integrating center. How do they function? We're going to look at some basic characteristics and functions of the reflexes. And this is just like our muscle class when we talked about the basic things in the beginning. Then we're going to get to the specifics here. So Oh, this is where I want to quick go through. Okay, characteristics. We have three different characters of a reflex. First of all, can you make a reflex happen? I shouldn't say that because you can provoke it. You can provoke it. Let's put it this way. If provoked, can you stop a reflex from happening?
Yeah.
Not really. You can dampen it, and I'll show you how. It will be a little test to see how much your brain has control over reflexes, but you cannot stop it. You can't control it. It's involuntary. So that's characteristic number one. Characteristic number two is that there always is a sensory stimulus which provokes the reflex. Always, always, always. Something's got to kick it off. And the third characteristic is that the response is always stereotyped. You know what? I think you've heard these characteristics before when we talked about the definition of a reflex, right? A fast, predictable, stereotyped. We're kind of going the same way here. That occurs from a change in the internal, external environment. That would be your sensory stimulus. Okay, so you've had this before in the definition. Now I'm just outlining it as far as characteristics of a reflex. Functions of a reflex. How do they function? Well, some reflexes are out there to protect. Protect. So in our definition, we said a reflex maintains homeostasis. Well, part of maintaining homeostasis is protection. So it's not always about chemical homeostasis. There can be other things involved in homeostasis. So protection, the pain that I was talking about. You provoke a reflex with pain. Typically, your response is to protect you from further pain. Alrighty? Another one, another function of a reflex is to maintain muscle tone and posture. Wow, let's pull off the last class now. What kind of muscle fiber is responsible for a lot of muscle tone and posture? Oh my gosh, I didn't even have to do ABCD. Good job, slow oxidative. Great, those were the ones that use up a lot of oxygen, work in endurance, your slow oxidative fibers. Wonderful. I didn't expect so many people to answer that. All right, next function, and the last one we're going to talk about is kind of like the catch-all. It maintains homeostasis, mentioned in the definition. This, I'm kind of getting more into the chemical homeostasis. All right, but that's the catch-all. All the other reflexes maintain homeostasis. Having said this, we're still going to get to some reflexes. You're going to say, well, this is the response. How does that protect you? How does that maintain muscle tone? I know there's some that really aren't going to fall into this because we do have some reflexes that are evolutionary based that really have no true function at all anymore. Okay? And we will get to this for the OT people. PT people, we'll get to this reflex 4 months from now. You got it. You're there. All right. Okay, now the reflexes come in a couple different ways. We're going to be talking about spinal reflexes today. These are ones that occur within the spinal column, the spinal cord specifically. There are two types. You have somatic and you have visceral. The somatic spinal reflexes are those that respond in contracting skeletal muscles, muscles that move bones. All right? Therefore, the visceral spinal reflexes contract what? Smooth and cardiac. Okay? We're not going to deal with the visceral reflexes today. We're just going to talk somatic skeletal reflexes. And are you ready? We're hopping right into them. The ones we're going to be talking about are the muscle stretch reflex. You see that abbreviated in the chart as MSR. Gamma loop reflex. And those two kind of go together. Muscle stretch reflex and gamma loop reflex, which makes it very easy for studying. And then we'll look at the next two, the flexor withdrawal reflex, which involves pain, and the cross extension reflex, which involves pain. So those two go together. So really, we're kind of learning two reflexes that have different branches to them. Let's go and have some fun with reflexes. The way your outline's organized is that you're going to hear me talk about the receptor, the stimulus that provokes that receptor, the response that reflex produces, And then why we have the reflex, maybe I can come up with an answer there, and then an example of it. So we're going to do that for each of them. So for this first one, the muscle stretch reflex, this is the one you've all had tested on you when the hammer hits your knee. Okay? The receptor for this reflex is the muscle spindle. It lies within the muscle tissue. The stimulus for this reflex is a change in muscle length. If you're changing muscle length, you're stretching it. So I know in the neuro classes I taught it as a stretch of the muscle. Same thing, just a different way of saying it. Change in muscle length. I'm getting a little bit more specific here. The response that happens is that very same muscle that had a change in length will contract. Simple as that. Now this reflex, if you look at it anatomically, it stays on one side of the body, so it's ipsilateral. It doesn't cross over. In other words, everything's on one side, and it only involves one synapse. Having said that, look at the picture. And you have a picture a little bit further on in your handout if you're not there already. And the pictures can be confusing at first because they involve dotted lines and multi-synapses. I want you to just right now focus on one part of the reflex, and it's the main solid line part. So in this diagram, the afferent neuron is blue. Right here, as it's entering the spinal cord, it splits. It's really just giving you a diagram. A real neuron doesn't split like this. A real neuron goes into one place. But being a diagram, it's showing you how some neurons do this, some neurons do that. Okay? We're following right now the neuron that comes into the spinal cord and synapses onto the afferent neuron. Those other neurons we're not talking about yet. Okay? So we're staying simple. Don't worry about the dotted lines just yet. So why do we have this reflex? Well, it does help with muscle tone. It protects our muscles from being overstretched is the big thing. How many of you have fallen asleep in class and you've actually done that thing where your neck drops all the way down and then it springs back up? That's your muscle stretch reflex working there. So another purpose of this reflex is to wake you up. Okay? You do the bobs forever and then it finally goes and you're up. All right, and I've seen this many times. It's protecting those muscles from overstretching. So as your neck muscles go into full flexion, they're stretching, the extensors are stretching, it's a protective response. So here it is all diagrammed out for you with the reflex hammer. During break, I'll bring them out. I know during break I'm going to be kicking the PTs out of here. But if you want to play with reflexes, PTs, don't worry. We'll have a class on Monday called Introduction to Clinical Assessment where we will do that. So reflex hammers. Reflex hits the tendon, not the muscle, but the tendon is part of the muscle, right? Okay. In doing so, it stretches or changes the length of that muscle. The response is that muscle contracts and the foot kicks out. The next reflex goes along with the muscle stretch reflex is the gamma loop reflex. This one, same receptor. I told you they kind of look the same. This one is the same exact receptor, the muscle spindle. And look at the stimulus. It's the same exact thing, a change in muscle length. Only the difference here is a postural muscle. We're looking at those muscles that hold posture in specific here. The response is a contraction of the very same muscle that stretched. But it's not the same type of contraction. It's a partial contraction. So this is the head bob going on before the big drop. Got the head bob. You got these little deviations. Your postural muscles are reacting to that. They're adjusting. They're keeping your head upright. All right? This is the gamma loop reflex. Right now, you have the gamma loop reflex working. It's chugging away, holding you into posture. All your muscles have a little bit of posture in them. I'm going to change that word to tone now. They all have a little bit of tone that keeps them from being rag doll. None of you look like a rag doll. Okay, so you all have tone, not just in the muscles in your neck, but throughout your entire body. Gamma loop reflex is always working, always, always. This reflex, we think about it as posture, okay, keeping the posture. It runs ipsilateral and involves more than one synapse, so it's polysynaptic. And the purpose is to keep our posture, to keep the length the right way in all of our muscles so that the muscles are functional. And if you've ever seen somebody who has a disorder of this, you'll know what I mean. How many of you ever worked with or seen a child with cerebral palsy who's like a rag doll? Okay, they do not have this reflex working at the same intensity, the same tone, producing the same tone. And because of that, they have a lot of trouble with motion, a lot of trouble. They have to overcome that. Then you have the other end of the spectrum. How many of you ever seen somebody that had a CVA, a stroke, and they hold their arm in tight, and their hand might be clutched into a fist? They have high tone in those muscles, which makes it that they have to fight it to get out of that posturing. So deviations, you see the problems. You guys all look like you have normal. Now, what makes this different from the other one I talked about, the muscle stretch reflex, has a lot to do with that efferent neuron. That component of this reflex is a different type of efferent neuron. In our class when we did nerves, and I'm sure in your class, we just kind of breezed through the different types of nerves. We talked about A, B, and C fibers. But amongst the A fibers, you can divide them out. And one of the types is a gamma. That's what's involved in posture, a gamma. So that's anatomically why you get a different response from the reflex. Same stimulus, same receptor, but the response is slightly different, and that's why. All right, I'm going to kind of take a quick little break. We can edit this out. Do you have something you need to put out, Sir and Frayne? I don't want you to stand back there forever. Oh, okay. All right. Okay, and I just want to let you know, if you can let the other instructors too, we're not on our normal normal time schedule because we have OT with us today, yay OT, and they start at 1300, not at 1220. So that's why we're a little bit different on the time schedule. Okay. All right, so now continuing on our reflexes. So we talked about muscle stretch reflex, gamma loop reflex. Very similar. Little differences. One produces that contraction, and one produces the muscle tone. Now we're going to do the next two somatic spinal reflexes, and these deal with pain, the pain stimulus. With both of these that we're doing, the first one is the flexor withdrawal reflex. This stimulus, or I'm sorry, the receptor, going in order, is a free nerve ending. Free nerve endings look like exposed roots, and they lie in your skin, and they sense pain, temperature, and crude touch. In specific, we're looking with this reflex as a pain stimulus. So that's the stimulus setting off the free nerve ending. The response is that the extremity that is exposed to the pain will withdraw in a flexion posture. That's why it's called flexor withdrawal reflex. The whole limb goes into a flexor posture. So if you step on something, a sharp piece of rock or glass or something, you flex as a response. Your limb goes into flexion. You touch something hot, you flex in response. Flexor withdrawal. This reflex is ipsilateral, meaning it stays on the same side. Stimulus comes in on this side. This is the side that responds. And it's polysynaptic. Boy, is it polysynaptic. Think about it. How many muscles go into a flexor withdrawal response? So we got to send the message to all of those different neurons controlling those muscles. So this thing has a ton of polysynaptic responses here. The purpose is obvious. It avoids further painful stimuli. Okay? I love the pictures on these. They have this nice little pin sticking in his toe, ever so gently. The blue neuron shows the afferent neuron. You have the receptor down there at the end, the free nerve ending, the blue neuron, the afferent, it comes in. And look at all the synapsing that occurs. We have it occurring right as it enters the spinal cord like we've had for the last two. But then you have it synapsing, synapsing here onto this neuron, which takes the message up high, and another neuron, which will take it down low, to different levels of the spinal cord to synapse on different efferent neurons, because we got to get more than one muscle reacting here. We got to get a slew, a whole extremity. Okay, and in fact, sometimes the painful stimulus will affect both extremities. So I stepped on a really sharp thing, a cactus. Or here in Texas, you step in a fire ant mound. Ah! The entire side of the body goes into flexor withdrawal. So you can have a lot of synapses, but it stays on the same side. Flexor withdrawal is unilateral, stays on the same side, many synapses. Efferent neurons come out, cause the muscles to contract that will pull into that flexor posture. Any questions on that one? That's kind of, these all kind of work, don't they? They're not too complicated. All right, the next one is the second half of that reflex in a way, the crossed extension. With this one, you're having the same receptor pick up the painful response. So the same receptor, the same stimulus. The response, though, is different. Instead of getting the flexor withdrawal, the response on this one is the crossed extension. Contralateral side extends out. So if I step on something, I'm going to flex with my one foot that I stepped on the thing, and my other leg will go into an extension pattern. Does it make sense? You need something on the ground, right? With your hands. I mean, watch yourselves this weekend as you do something stupid. Okay? You get your finger caught in a drawer. This one will flex out. This one will, you'll knock your friend over. That's the reflex. Why? Maintains balance. It also keeps you from falling over in the case of your feet. But it balances out the reaction, cross extension. Can you have a cross extension without a flexor withdrawal? Yeah. Not really. No, not really. They come as a package deal. The wiring, the anatomical wiring is separate, but they come as a package. You usually get the both at the same time. What you may find you have is you have a strong flexor withdrawal and a real mild extension, crossed extension. But it's going to be there. All right? I'm not telling you to plant painful experiences to your roommates or anything, but keep an eye on each other. Okay? Look for the flexor withdrawal with the crossed extension. It's there. So looking at this one diagrammed, ouch! It can hurt your eyes, right? Look at all those polysynaptic integration going on there. We have a lot of synapses going on here. The key thing to look at here is it crosses to the other side, causing the contralateral extremity to go into a pattern. All righty, we got through the somatic spinal reflexes. Now we must take our attention to the law. Always a law. Seems like every class has a law. This one is not the all or none law, though. We have a different law. This one's called the law of reciprocal innervation. And as I've said before in other classes, laws sound very, you know, superior and highly intellectual, but they're always about something very obvious. This one's extremely obvious. The law of reciprocal innervation is saying that as an agonist contracts, the antagonist must relax. That's all. Big law. But the reason we're talking about it here is because it's a reflex. Let's go back to our fancy pictures. I told you to ignore the dotted lines. Now we must put our attention to the dotted lines. And remember, the blue afferent neuron coming in here, it's not one neuron branching. Okay? It's many neurons. Some neurons synapse here, which is part of the reflex, causing the muscle to contract here. No, I got it wrong. What am I? I'm looking at the wrong reflex. Oops. Erase that. I got to follow my lines better. Okay. Once again, chike chew. We have, in this case, where's my afferent? There it is. Okay. We're doing the Golgi tendon. We didn't even talk about this reflex. No wonder it doesn't make any sense. All right. Sorry, folks. I put the wrong slide in. What we have going on is stimulus, afferent neuron coming in. In the case of this reflex, which you didn't learn, what happens right here is it stimulates a muscle to do something. In this case, to relax. The law of The law of reciprocal innervation tells us that if one contracts, the other will relax. The dotted line is showing that as one muscle is told to contract, the other one will be told to relax. Problem with this slide is it's doing it in reverse. So I'm going to like back up really quick to the slide that I really want to do this on. Right here. The one we learned, the muscle stretch reflex. Afferents coming in. Right here, we have a synapse. That's where the integration occurs. The efferent coming out tells the muscle to contract for the foot to kick out. Meanwhile, another neuron comes in and synapses, it's actually a couple synapses, to make the law of reciprocal innervation work. And it turns off the antagonist so that this muscle will not contract, but in fact relax. So anytime you have a message for a muscle to contract, there's a reflexive message for the muscle that is the antagonist to relax. So this law is brought up now because it's a reflexive law. It's something in all of our bodies. It's implanted in there. The wiring is there that when one muscle gets turned on, the antagonist gets turned off. It's a reflex. Any questions on that? All right, let me speed ahead. Too far. Okay, now we're almost there, PT folks. So T, you, we got a good day. No, we don't have much more for the OT. Primitive reflexes. Love the slide because I love the caveman. We're going to talk about some different type of reflexes. Now, we're finished up on those somatic spinal reflexes that all happen in the spinal cord. Nice, quick, and easy. You can graph them out. They might be polysynaptic, but they're still not too complicated. Now we're going to get into some of these other types of reflexes that involve a little bit more of the brain and a little bit more interaction centrally in the central nervous system. So what we're going to go into is the primitive reflexes. These are reflexes you are all born with. Your patients will all be born with them. But at some point in their development, neurologically, their brain will suppress these reflexes and they won't present anymore. So I know we got a couple folks with newborns out there and some on the way. So you can keep this in mind for when the babies are born. Your babies all have these reflexes. And you take them to the doctor for their well baby check, and the doctor's going to provoke these reflexes to see how they're developing. Because at certain points in their development, the reflexes should start to go away. Primitive reflexes. They're there in infancy, they go away. Then, if they don't go away when they should, you change the name on them. Then they become pathological. They're no longer cute and fun. Now they're pathological. They're showing that we have delayed brain development, or in the case of our older patients who were normally developed that have a brain injury, they come back and now they're pathological. So primitive reflexes and pathological reflexes are the same reflex but different times. Primitive is when you're supposed to have them. Pathological is when they either don't go away or they come back. Is that distinction clear? All righty. Okay. We're going to talk about a couple of the primitive reflexes, and I'm going to follow the PT handout now. So OT, I'm going to tell you when we need to skip, and then we'll go back and fill in the gap. Okay, because OT has more of these reflexes to learn than the PTs do at this point. So the first one we're going to look at is Babinski, and then Hoffman's, and then superficial reflex. And then we have just one more topic to talk about before you're done. And then we'll get into those other two with the OTs. So Babinski, looking at the feet. Babinski is a reflex you observe on the foot. This one goes away at about the year mark. And I'm saying about. There's no black and white. It should be here today, not here tomorrow. So if you have an infant at home that's 13 months and you do this on and it's still there, I don't want you freaking out. There's a lot of fudge room here, okay? But about a year is when you see the Babinski starting to be suppressed by the brain, starting to go away. The stimulus for this reflex is stroking along the bottom of the foot. You go up the lateral side of the foot and then across the ball of the foot. That's the pattern. And when you do that, the response, if it's present, will be that the big toe sticks up, it extends out, the great toe, and the other toes flare out. So you have this response. Once the reflex goes away after a year, the response will be curling in of the toes, like a tickly response. The toes will curl in or nothing will happen if you have a non-ticklish person. But if the big toe sticks out and the others flay, meaning they extend as well, it's a positive Babinski. Normal before 1 year, that's primitive. Pathological after the year mark, or if it comes back, well, after the year mark. This involves a lesion to an upper motor neuron, which means the part of the motor pathway that goes from brain to spinal cord. Then there's another neuron that takes the message from spinal cord to the muscles. If you see Babinski being present, that's talking about an upper motor neuron injury. Your stroke patients can have it present, your head injury patients, and those children that are not developing neurologically in the brain. Here's a diagram of it showing the pattern that you put on along the foot. What usually clinicians use is the other side of their reflex hammer, okay, or the back of their pen. You know, not the part that has ink, but the other side. Something hard. If worse comes to worse, I'll use my fingernail of my thumb, but you need something hard that's not going to be painful. A similar type reflex to assess an upper extremity is the Hoffman's. So this one, you do it on the foot. Hoffman's, you use the hand. But it's similar in that you're testing the upper motor neuron, not the lower. Yes?
Just real quick, on the back of the Babinski, if you see it, so a negative Babinski sign is good. That means they're normal after 1 year. Okay. And
yeah.
A positive one where the toes do their thing, that means there's something.
Yes. Okay. After 1 year. Keep that disclaimer in there. After 1 year, most of our patients in the military are going to be after 1 year, okay? In therapy, we see very few infants, maybe OT more than PT. But if you see a Babinski, if it's a positive Babinski, that's abnormal. If you do it to each other tonight and you get a positive Babinski, talk to us, okay? We got problems. Hoffman's. Same thing with Hoffman's. At about a year, it goes away. So for the first year, it's a primitive reflex. All's fine and wonderful. After that, it's pathological, and that's a problem. So a positive Hoffman's after a year is a problem. With this, you have the patient hold their hand out, or you hold their hand out for them if you need to, and you just flick the middle finger. That's all you do. Just give it a little flick at the distal tip. The response that would be a positive Hoffman's is the first two digits coming together in a pinch. That would be positive. So I see you doing it to yourself. If you see it happening where you're bringing your thumb and your finger together into a pinch, positive Hoffman's, talk to me after class. If nothing happens, then it's normal. Okay, nothing is normal after a year. And here's a picture of Hoffman's being done. The last one, I don't even like teaching it because it's such a tricky one to get to have happen. This is a weird reflex in that it never becomes pathological. It stays primitive and it should be there throughout life. But it's a tricky one to get to have happen because usually your patient suppresses it the same way you can suppress being hit with the reflex hammer. And I'm going to get into that in just a moment. With this one, you're testing the thoracic region. So we had one for the foot, one for the hand. Now we're going into the thoracic region. What you do is you expose the abdomen region so you can see the belly button, umbilicus. And gently you stroke one side of the umbilicus, the skin on one side of it. Not actually in the umbilicus, but to the side, gently. And what you're looking for is the umbilicus to deviate to that stroke. Kind of bizarre, huh? Now, the thing is, you have to have the patient totally relaxed and totally concentrating on something else. If they are focused on what you're doing, it's not going to work. And typically, patients are focused on what you're doing when you're stroking their abdomen. So it's a very hard reflex to provoke. But I was going to take it out, but I kept it in because I'm a neuro PT. And with our neuro patients, we get comatose patients. We get brain injuries, traumatic brain injuries. Those patients are not focused on you, okay? Those are the ones you'll see this occurring. And when you don't see it occurring, then you know you have a problem, okay? Or if you see it occurring hyperly, then you know you're having a problem, which brings me to my next topic. And don't worry, we'll get back to the, you guys have to flip forward now. OTs, wherever you are, flip forward till you get to learning step 6, I believe it is, where it talks about upper motor neuron lesions. We'll get back to those other fun reflexes in just a moment. Upper motor neuron lesions, our last topic, and then PTs, you finally have done it for the day. This has been a long week. Let me pull all this up. Okay, are you guys there, OTs? Okay. The motor system is organized in your body so that the message goes from brain to muscle using two neurons, upper motor neuron, lower motor neuron. The upper motor neuron goes from brain to spinal cord, so it's all within the central nervous system. The lower motor neuron goes from spinal cord to muscle, so it's all peripheral, pretty much, except for the cell body. If you have an injury of one of these two, you end up with different types of symptoms. So an upper motor neuron, brain to spinal cord, you can have damage to that up in the brain stem, or in the spinal cord. That tract crosses from one side of the body to the other in the brain stem. So if you have it up in the brain, you're going to see the weird stuff happening on the contralateral side. If you have it in the spinal cord, once it's crossed, it's going to be on the same side as injury. Don't worry too much about that. What I want you to worry more about is the type of characteristics that occur. Let me pull them all up. Oops, I pulled too far. Pull them all up there. If the injury occurs within that upper motor neuron, central nervous system, your patient is going to be called spastic paralysis. That's what they're going to have. And spastic paralysis tells you pretty much all these other characteristics, actually. It sums them all up. What it means is that your reflexes are going to go crazy, absolutely wild. Okay, how many of you, when you had your reflexes tested and they hit you with the hammer, had to go like this? Nobody? We got one. We got one. This is a really common thing. When they hit you on the hammer at the kneecap there and you don't have much of a response, you know, your knee just kicks out or doesn't do anything, what the clinician will have you do is take your hands, lock them together, and pull apart. What they're having you do is divert your brain away from what they're doing. Your brain is now focused on muscle activity in your upper extremities to pull apart. Your brain's an interesting thing. It can do a lot of things at once, but it tends to focus on one thing. So if it focuses on this, it's going to take the focus off the reflex, which is going to allow that reflex arc to happen without any brain suppression. Your brain suppresses reflexes. So when I said you can't control reflexes, oh, you have a little bit of emphasis on them, but you can't turn them off. Okay? Another way I like to suppress, or not like to take away the brain suppression, is I'll have my patients spell their name backwards, or I'll give them a math problem. Like I'll say, starting at 100, subtract 7 and go down to 0, or, you know, keep going. So usually they're good for the first one, 100, 93, and then they go like this. And that's when I get them with the reflex hammer. And that's when I'll see the best reflex, because their brain's focused on something else. They're not suppressing. Okay, so let's go back to these characteristics. If the brain is suppressing, it's coming down that upper motor neuron. That's where the suppression is coming from. So if you have an injury to that neuron, are you going to have any suppression of your reflex? No. Reflex can happen without the brain. It's party time. And that's exactly what happens with your upper motor neuron lesion patients. Your stroke patients, your spinal cord injury patients, they have reflexes that are strong. You hit one of them with the reflex hammer, their foot goes kicking out. Don't be in front of it. So The term spasticity or spastic paralysis is referring to the fact that they have a lot of tone in their muscle. Gamma loop reflexes going crazy. They got that tone pulling them in. They're spastic, spasticity. Paralysis is because mentally they cannot control that muscle. So they have the reflex, but if I tell them, go ahead and flex your arm, they won't be able to do it because they've been paralyzed. The message can't go from brain to muscle, but the reflex arc still can work. Because has anything been injured in the reflex arc if we're just getting the upper motor neuron? No, that whole reflex arc is still working. OT folks, if you're not clicking with me, don't worry. We'll go into it more. They've had a little bit on this already, the PTs. Okay, so we have all these characteristics. Increased spasticity, because the gamma loop reflex is going wild. Hyperreflexia, so every reflex, not just the gamma loop, right, but every reflex has no suppression. So they're all going wild. Pathological reflexes are present because they're all going wild. It's like saying the same thing over and over again. So we're going to have a positive Babinski, positive Hopman's. The superficial abdominal is going to be really obvious. It's going to be hyperreflexive. And there'll be muscle wasting because the brain cannot control that muscle. So really, the only thing that makes that muscle go is a reflex. Can you stay strong by just doing reflexes? No. You know, those spinal cord injury patients, they try doing all sorts of things to keep the muscles from atrophying in the legs. Now, you can't just provoke reflex and strengthen a patient. It's not going to work, so you're going to have atrophy of the muscle. Let's compare that to the lower motor neuron lesions. So this is where the upper motor neuron is fine. Injury's not brain or spinal cord. The injury's in the periphery, so they had a nerve injury. Laceration or traction injury, something like that. So the damage is going to be on the same side as the injury. That kind of makes sense. And the characteristics will look like this. They're going to have flaccid paralysis. The flaccid is referring to that muscle tone. Can the gamma loop reflex work when the lower motor neuron, that efferent neuron of the reflex, is damaged? No way. No. We got no reflex. So gamma loop reflex cannot work. That's your posture reflex, so you get limp. Alrighty? Paralysis, because the message coming from the brain to the muscle isn't going to get there. Same thing. So we got paralysis, but now it's flaccid. It's not spastic. It's all about the reflexes. So all the next things talk about reflexes. Decreased muscle tone. Well, that's what flaccid means. Hyporeflexia. Reflexes are nothing, zero, or very diminished. No pathological reflexes. So you're not going to see a Babinski or a Hoffman's with this type of injury. And you're going to have muscle wasting, so you're going to have atrophy. But now it's termed neurogenic atrophy because the nerve of that motor unit has been injured. So the other one was termed disuse atrophy because the message isn't coming from the brain to that motor unit. Now it's called neurogenic atrophy. So both will have atrophy, just different names for them. All righty. So PTs, any questions? Don't pack up. Hang on. I hate when people pack up when I'm asking any questions. Pet peeve. Alrighty, what you need to know of this reflex class, all those initial things I talked about, the definition, the five parts of a reflex. I mean, I'm going to tell you straight out, there is a question on that. And I'm also going to tell you straight out that people get it wrong all the time. How can you get it wrong? You got a receptor, an afferent neuron, integration, efferent neuron, and an effector. Ah, but anyway, study it, please. And then you have characteristics and functions of reflexes, three each, and then we get into the different reflexes. So with what I want you to know from those different reflexes, what stimulates it, what's the receptor, what's the response, and if there's a function, go for it. And then we talked about pathological versus primitive. Know the difference, and we talked about the three different primitive reflexes, Babinski's, Hoffman's, and superficial abdominal, and then lastly, be able to differentiate via the characteristics between the two different types.